Members, today is Monday, February 17th, and the time is 1 o'clock. I call this meeting of Health, Finance, and Policy Committee to order. And members, we have a quorum. Good, thank you. Representative Zalesnikar, have you had a chance to look at the minutes, and would you like to move them and for approval?
I have. I make a motion to move the minutes.
Thank you. Representative Zalesnikar moves approval of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those against say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. So, members, first on the agenda today is House File 10 from Representative Schiltz, and he is already at the table. So, Representative Nadeau moves that House File 10 be referred to the Committee of State Government Finance and Policy. Representative Schiltz, please present your bill. Oh, and members, we will go, because we've got two bills, our goal is to take a vote on this bill no later than 2:05, as soon as 2 o'clock. We anticipate this one may be more of a robust discussion, so I'm going to give that latitude and so forth. So with that said, Representative Schiltz, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Lead Bierman, and members of the committee. I'm Isaac Schiltz. I represent House District 10B in central Minnesota, and it's a pleasure to be before you. This is the first time that I've had the chance to be in front of the Health Committee. And today I am bringing House File 10 to this committee because Minnesota is facing unprecedented challenges with a looming $5 billion budget deficit. We simply do not have time to waste in addressing and tackling this challenge. As we all know from the time that we each spent on the campaign trail over the last 2 years, but especially last fall, we know that families are hurting and struggling through the rising cost of living, from energy to health care to grocery prices to the cost to obtain a higher education, and so much else, and so much else. And far too often, Minnesotans today are seeing their tax dollars go to folks who are here illegally on public programs like MinnesotaCare, which are becoming magnets for people from foreign countries, which is the ultimate redistribution of wealth away from hardworking, blue-collar Minnesota families. House File 10, the bill before us today, can help cut a projected $100 million plus in spending in the next biennium by making a change simply to the eligibility requirements for MinnesotaCare. Since January of this year, people without lawful and legal status to be here have been signing up by the thousands, and it's quite possible that they're already beginning to overwhelm MinnesotaCare, while at the same time paying very low premiums or maybe not even paying premiums at all, which is in contrast to the hardworking legal citizens and Minnesotans who pay for very unaffordable health care and health insurance premiums. And my simple question for you right now is why? Why should people who broke the law to come here to benefit from our public programs pay less than a working family with a two-income household living paycheck to paycheck and trying to provide for their kids? Why should those without legal status have access to MinnesotaCare for low premiums or free, while Minnesota's farmers face both high premiums and high deductibles, while their market conditions remain unpredictable and continuously consolidated? Unfortunately, that's not the only problem that we face here in Minnesota. MinnesotaCare is a distinct basic health plan and receives reimbursement from the federal government through Medicaid for approximately half of the cost of MinnesotaCare. However, federal law precludes the dollars from being used to support those who are here illegally, meaning state tax dollars have to pay double in order to benefit people who are here illegally from foreign countries, all the while our health care access fund could very well be depleted if demand remains at a high level in Minnesota. So I want you to know, because you debate this issue hotly every day and every week, that I too share the concern of the cost of uncompensated care that takes place at Minnesota hospitals. but using public programs to attract more people from foreign countries to Minnesota, and then having blue-collar, hardworking taxpayers foot the bill is not a method of success to keep health insurance rates low. During the years of the Walz administration, over $500 million has been wasted on fraud. And simply by the way that this program, MinnesotaCare, is being administered to folks who are here without legal status, there is a ripe possibility for additional fraud. And I have a great concern for that as well. So now is the time for us to address these eligibility requirements, which were only changed just 2 years ago, so that we together can stop the waste, fraud, and abuse of our tax dollars. I look forward to your comments, the questions, and I ask for support of House File 10. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Testifiers, we will be giving every testifier 2 minutes. We will be pretty strict on it because we got two important bills here today. So first on deck is Matt Dean. And then following Matt Dean will be Dan Ederson on deck. And then after Dan will be Mary Krinke. Please state your name for the record and your testimony. Go ahead, Mr. Dean.
Thank you, Chair Backer and members. My name is Matt Dean. I'm a fellow with the Center for the American Experiment, which is a 35-year-old nonprofit think tank. We work to make Minnesota freer, more prosperous, and a better governed state. I'd like to just begin by thanking you all for being on this committee and for the very, very hard work that you do and will do throughout this session. I'd like to just address this House File 10 in just a couple of different ways, but the first thing is I want to talk about is just three issues that you should know about this bill. Number one, how it's paid for through the Healthcare Access Fund. That is a depleting resource and that the sources into it are getting smaller, not bigger, particularly from the federal government. Number two, that it creates a two-tier system with one system for of eligibility determination for Minnesota residents who are here legally and those a second one for those who are not, and the standard for people who are not here legally is actually lower. And a third is that, as Representative Schultz pointed out, that this creates a wide hole for fraud. This will create a truck size hole to drive through for fraud. And that's something to be very, very careful about. The Healthcare Access Fund, which in your packets is in the forecast. If you do one thing today for me as a favor, just please pull this out, fold it in half, put it in your breast pocket or in your bag. Carry it with you because this will be used at the end of session to redistribute goodies to other committee chairs to get out of session. This should not be how this is used, but you should be take care in how that is used. This is a fund that was started in 1994. It's supported by premiums. Paid for by people who are enrolled in MinnesotaCare. It's also supported by the federal government, and it's also supported by the Minnesota sick tax, which Governor Dayton agreed to end. Now, an accumulating fund balance started to grow after that moved to Medicaid, and an accumulating fund balance surrounded by legislators is an endangered species. So that was rescued by both Republicans and Democrats, and it is now being used for other things. So take very close care in how this money is being distributed. This money is being used for this program, and the reason that it is that these folks cannot go on Medicaid because it is illegal. But I would just like to end with one thing. And that is really the crux of the problem of how this is being paid for. And that's what I want to focus on. And if you look, there was a DHS directive that said, this is when you're looking at eligibility for this program, I'm going to quote, to qualify for MinnesotaCare after July 1st, 2025, people who are undocumented individuals must attest that they are not lawfully present. MinnesotaCare eligibility will be approved for an applicant who indicates that they do not have a lawful present status or circumstance. That is the crux of the problem. Because anybody by attestation can qualify for this program. And it also goes on to say that anyone who previously said they were legal and are now not, you're supposed to automatically assume that they are not legal and put them on Minnesota Care. It creates a huge fraud problem for moving forward. And that alone should be a reason to move this forward. Obviously creates a problem.
Mr. Dean, if you can wrap that up, please.
We'll wrap it up. So to just wrap up, this creates a huge fraud problem. It also is unbalanced in how it is being paid for from the Healthcare Access Fund. And please, once again, take the Healthcare Access Fund balance sheet. It comes out twice a year. Read it. And this is kept separate from the general fund, and it is something that this committee has charge over, both policy and finance. With that, Mr. Chair and members, I have be available for any questions or follow-up during or after the committee. Thank you.
Thank you. And for members who were not here many years ago, Matt Dean was our chair of this exact same committee for the first two sessions that I was on this committee. So thank you. Next on deck is Dan Anderson. And again, 2 minutes, please. And then Mary Krinke. And then after that is Jason Atkins. So go ahead, Dan. State your name and please keep it to 2 minutes.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the trade association for Minnesota's nonprofit insurers, which includes Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota, Health Partners, Medica, Sanford Health Plan, and UCARE. The council does not have a position on provisions in the bill that are outside the jurisdiction of this committee, but are respectfully opposed to the provision in the bill to repeal Minnesota Care eligibility to undocumented residents. The council supported this extension in the 2023 omnibus bill because of our standing position on the importance of access to health care coverage. Health care coverage leads to better health care outcomes, especially for children and people living with chronic conditions. When people are covered and they have access to care, they can seek preventative care as well as vaccinations, which improves public health. Having insurance coverage also mitigates the delivery of uncompensated care, especially for hospitals who have a duty to care for those who show up in their emergency rooms. Uncompensated care is a significant driver or a significant contributor to health care costs, which we're all paying for. As this bill moves forward, the council asks for reconsideration of this provision in House File 10. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Mrs. Mary Krinke up, and then Jason Atkins, and then Stuart Lowry, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correct. So please state your name for the record, and 2 minutes, please. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. For the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. In 2023 session, the Minnesota Care eligibility was expanded to include non-citizens. The effective date of that legislation was January 1 of 2025, so providers have actually had very little experience regarding what the uptake of the program is or will potentially be. We do know that without coverage, however, fewer non-citizens will show up for primary care. At some point, however, they will likely need emergency room care. And so given that hospitals and our emergency rooms are open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, we know that people will access emergency room care. And I know you all know about this, but it really is important to mention, and that is the federal law EMTALA, which stands for Emergency Medical Treatment and Active Labor Act. And we are required to take care of anyone who shows up in the emergency room, regardless of their ability to pay. I also want to note that Minnesota's hospitals are nonprofit, and this is part of our mission as well. Charity care provided by Minnesota hospitals has gone up 30% between 2022 and 2023. It was $353 million in 2022 and $460 million in 2023. This is notable in light of the fact that 40% of our hospitals had negative operating margins, and yet they are providing a lot of charity care. A broader challenge for hospitals and the health systems, however, than charity care is Medicaid underpayments. And I think it is important for us to point out that Medicaid underpayments right now are close to $1 billion. So we will continue to provide charity care in the hospital emergency rooms. We could do so more easily if our Medicaid rates were closer to our costs. I just want to close by sharing with you all today that we are in for some very difficult discussions in this committee in light of what is being discussed in Washington, D.C. We get $12.5 billion a year from the federal government to support our Medicaid program. We have 1.25 million Minnesotans on the Medicaid program. I think it would be wise to look at this potential cut and perhaps consider what else is coming and slow down a bit and let's just ponder what are the options for all involved. Minnesota's nonprofit hospitals have challenging finances ahead of us, and we do so now, and all funding sources are important. We would like to urge caution before this legislation is passed. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Atkins, and then after that is Mr. Lurie, and then after that will be Ms. Diaz. So please state your name and 2 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Backer, Representative Schultz, members of the committee. I'm Jason Atkins, Executive Director of the Minnesota Catholic Conference, the public policy voice of the Catholic Church in Minnesota. We oppose the elimination of Minnesota Care access for undocumented immigrants. Please strip that provision of the bill or vote no altogether. At the very least, Minnesota Care access for undocumented children should be preserved. My predecessor, Father James Habiger, played a key role in the enactment of Minnesota Care to give lower-income Minnesotans access to affordable insurance. He did so because we're called to be stewards of the gift of life, and access to health care via health insurance is necessary to properly steward the gift that God has so generously given us. Refusing to provide access to health insurance simply because of one's legal status is a blunt approach to a more complex problem. Our immigration system is broken and needs to be fixed at the federal level. Until then, as Minnesotans, we can take steps to ensure the basic dignity and needs of our immigrant brothers and sisters, such as offering them the opportunity to purchase health insurance. Undocumented immigrants are in the United States for a variety of reasons, which include, among other things, the desire by businesses for cheap labor and Americans' appetite for narcotics and the cartels and gangs that that desire feeds. We welcome immigrants when convenient and also punish them when doing so is advantageous. They are, as Pope Francis has said, pawns on the chessboard of humanity. Minnesota's long-term budget numbers are cloudy, and there are not endless resources. There is nothing wrong with prioritizing the needs of citizens first. But we still need to remember that we do owe injustice for some of the reasons I've already mentioned, respect for the basic needs of all people, including the stranger in our midst. Our legal status is secondary to our fundamental identity as children of the one Father, and thus as brothers and sisters. Let's think creatively how we can manage budgets in a truly just way, focusing on needs before amenities. Let's prioritize direct services and supports to those in need versus indirect services facilitated by third-party vendors with no metrics for success. And maybe with Minnesota Care, we can think differently about what is health care and what is not, such as the elimination of coverage for elective abortions, or re-examining current premium formulas and particular exemptions from paying premiums. Now, don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not advocating for an increase in price for Minnesota Care. But rather than excluding a whole class of people from eligibility, we should consider how we can make the program work better for those who use it, those who would like to use it, and the taxpayer. That's how we make politics a vehicle for the common good and not just works that privileges favored groups and disadvantages others. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Thank you. We have Mr. Lurie up, then Ms. Diaz, and then after that would be Dr. Gilbert on deck. So go ahead, state your name and for the record, and 2 minutes, please.
Thank you, Chair Backer and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Stu Lurie. I'm Government Relations Director for Minnesota Farmers Union, and on behalf of our organization, I'm grateful for the opportunity to share our opposition to HF 10. The focus of this committee, I'll speak to the provision taking Minnesota Care away from undocumented folks. Our organization supported this expansion in 2023 We think it benefits all of us and makes our communities and our agriculture community stronger, and we're concerned about efforts to roll it back. I'll start by saying broadly that Minnesota Care is an excellent product. Our members rely on it, and it's well worth expanding and stewarding. And to build on this conversation, I've had the opportunity to talk with some of our members about this particular proposal, and I'll try to just add a couple points. First, we supported coverage from undocumented folks because they play a critical role in our food and agriculture system. Immigrants disproportionately work not just on farms, but also in food processing, meat packing, food service. Farmers in our food system rely on folks who are new to our country to get products to your dinner table every day. We think it's not only the right thing to do, but it also benefits all of us when folks can get the health care that they need. Second, and specific to farmers, but we're facing a challenging time in the ag economy coming up. And a chief concern for a lot of mid-sized farms is availability of help on the farm. And for those farms in particular, making it harder for folks to get preventative health care certainly doesn't help with that. Finally, I'll just say that when I go around county conventions, the 6 years that I've been with Farmers Union, if someone brings up immigration, it's they'll poke me in the chest and say, why aren't you talking about comprehensive immigration reform every day? I remember one farmer saying, it should be at the top of your newsletter every week, our system is confusing, it's cumbersome, it doesn't work for anyone, it fails a lot of people, and Congress hasn't done their work to make that right, and so, it isn't right for our state to hold folks accountable for that lack of action on the federal level. So I'll sum it up by saying Minnesota Care is an excellent program, well worth expanding, and we all do better when more folks can get the health care that they need. Thank you, and happy to stand for any questions. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Lurie. Next is Ms. Diaz, and then after that is Dr. Gilbert, and then after Dr. Gilbert, Ms. Pula Ruth. So go ahead, state your name for the record, and 2 minutes, please, Ms. Diaz.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Samantha Diaz, and I am the political director of SEIU Local 26. We represent 8,000 janitors, security officers, high-rise window cleaners, and airport passenger service workers. We are opposing we're in opposition to the proposed exclusion of our fellow Minnesotans in critical programs like Minnesota Care. On this bill today, I'm also authorized to speak on behalf of Unite Here, Local 17, representing 6,000 hospitality workers, and UFCW 663, representing 15,000 retail, grocery, meatpacking, healthcare, and more workers. We understand this hearing is actually about dividing Minnesotans as a distraction from the real issues that keep our families up at night. Minnesotans are angry and feel the day-to-day impacts of rising costs from healthcare to the price of eggs. This is at a time when billionaires and big corporations are allowed to hoard more and more money off of the work of our backs. That should make us all angry. So instead of celebrating and strengthening a policy that helps us address this issue, this committee is choosing to roll back this law for a select few Minnesotans. We've seen nationally that the goals of things or proposals like this isn't about good policy in order to help people. It's to slash and burn good programs, often using our immigrant neighbors as scapegoats. Will denying our neighbors access to programs that they have earned, like healthcare, will that lower the cost for others? We know the answer is no. And so choosing to be harsh to immigrant families does nothing to address the skyrocketing healthcare costs and the greedy health insurance companies who are making huge profits off of our families. And just to note, their greed does not take into account where we were born or the political affiliation or our political affiliation. And so as a state, we are better than this, and I hope this committee can rise above the divisive politics that Minnesotans hate. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Diaz. Next is Dr. Gilbert. After Dr. Gilbert will be Pula Ruth, Mrs. Pula Ruth. And then finally, that folks who signed up will be a Mr. Gillen. So again, please state your name for the record in 2 minutes, please.
Good afternoon, Chair Backer and members of the community committee. My name is Dr. Amy Gilbert. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. I'm here to talk about why the expansion of Minnesota Care to every community in Minnesota is a necessary lifeline for all. I'm a family physician. I've practiced in Minnesota for 30 years and trained here. Healthcare is essential to the health of all our communities, and House File 10 is a step in the wrong direction. We need to expand income limits so more families can qualify for Minnesota care. I'll leave it to others, some who have, to make the economic arguments on productivity and public health. I do know when people can't see a doctor, hospital emergency rooms bear the burden of uncompensated care. We need to revise how healthcare is structured and paid for rather than cut people off from it. When people in our community can't get the care they need, our community is less well. It doesn't benefit our state to scapegoat an essential workforce that is moving our state forward. In 2022 alone, Minnesotans without legal status contributed $221 million in state and local taxes, supporting the very systems that House File now, Street 10, now seeks to strip away. Every human, every person has dignity and value. Think about it, because I know you believe that. You're committed people. You're doing hard work because you care about human well-being. I mean, I know that's why you're at the Capitol. Every person has dignity and value. This one, this one, and this one. This bill says that people must not receive any service, payment, grant, loan, subsidy, or other form of financial aid or assistance funded by state revenue. It says, we people of Minnesota must not provide any help or support, in this case healthcare, to our neighbors who are here for a better life and doing work that they are hired to do. This is unkind and inhumane. We are better than this. Protect Minnesota care. Reject House File 10. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Gilbert. Next is Ms. Pula Ruth and then Mr. Quillen. Please state your name for the record and 2 minutes, please. Thank you.
Ursula Pula Ruth. Good afternoon, Chair Backer and committee members. My name is Ursula Pula Ruth, and I'm a registered nurse, and I've worked in labor and delivery.
Excuse me, could you move that mic a little closer so we can hear you better? Because we want to hear. Thank you.
Can you hear me now?
A little bit closer.
Okay.
Thank you. We want to hear you. We'll start over with your time. Go ahead.
Thank you. My name is Ursula Pula Ruth, and I'm a registered nurse, and I've worked in labor and delivery for nearly 10 years. I'm chair of the Birth Equity Work Group that works to decrease disparities in maternal and newborn health care. There are currently 81,000 immigrants without status living in Minnesota, and over half of them have lived here for 10 to 20 years. They've spent their hard-earned tax dollars in the same stores we frequent, all with the same goal, is to care for our families. House File 10 places 81,000 immigrants at serious risk and susceptible to health complications and medical issues. Normally, those with access to care like me and many people here do not experience. When people don't have access to affordable medical care, they go without. I see pregnant patients go without prenatal care due to barriers in health care, which significantly increases risks to their health and their baby. Managed hypertension and treatable blood pressures turn into a heart attack or stroke, or wounds turn into a staph infection and sepsis, or a tooth infection spreads and passes through the brain to the barrier to the brain, which I've seen and cared for working in healthcare. Taking away affordable health care from 81,000 immigrants without status, including their children, or force them to seek medical care in emergency rooms. The influx of people seeking health care in the ER will increase the workload of nurses and healthcare professionals throughout Minnesota. Eliminating access to affordable health care creates a barrier and adds to the health care disparities to all immigrants, regardless of immigration status. And it will worsen the boarding issues in emergency departments across the state. Mr. Chair, committee members, please vote for humanity and compassion by voting no today.
Thank you, Ms. Pula Ruth. Now we go to Mr. Dan Quillen. State your name, please, and 2 minutes, sir.
Thank you. My name is Dan Quillen. I live in West St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm here to strongly oppose House File 10, which aims to strip mid-Minnesota care access from undocumented immigrants who meet the program's income guidelines. Minnesota Care has been a crucial resource for Minnesota. It offers necessary health care coverage that many cannot afford. Recently, it was extended to our undocumented community. These individuals significantly contribute to our community through their labor, families, and economic participation. Denying them health care access harms not only them, but our entire community. Undocumented immigrants already face numerous challenges. Removing their health care coverage will worsen these issues, leading to greater health care disparities and increasing the strain on emergency services. Without preventive care, serious health conditions become more common, resulting in costly emergency care that ultimately burdens all taxpayers. This legislation contradicts the values of compassion and inclusivity that define Minnesota. We pride ourselves on caring for all residents, regardless of immigration status. By preserving Minnesota Care, we uphold our commitment to health equity, ensuring everyone can live a healthy, productive life. I urge you to recognize the profound negative impact House File 10 will have on our undocumented immigrant community. Health care should be a fundamental right, not a privilege. Please vote against House File 10 to protect the health and dignity of all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gillen. Next, are there any members of the public wishing to testify? Okay, seeing none. Before I do that, one of the things that I forgot, and I don't see us having a rowdy crowd in here, but please do not approach the tables. Audience, do not approach the table. Keep the aisles clear. If you do need to need something, we have the sergeants in arms that can help you out. So I just wanted to make sure everybody is aware of that. So with that, members, I will open it up to questions and discussions. Again, to give a little bit more latitude, we're going to go to 205. And first, on deck is Representative Bierman. So go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I did want to ask about a fiscal note. Is there a fiscal note for the bill, Representative Schultz?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bierman. We have requested a fiscal note. It is working through the process. That request has been out for several weeks at this point, so I'm eager to get it, just like you are. And the information that I have provided to each of the committee members today that the pages brought around prior to the start of the committee is the fiscal note information that related to Section 3 of this bill from the 2023 session, which was found within House File 96, in case you're looking to reference back to that. I have each of that, that information is before the committee as well.
Before we go that, I would like, if it's okay with you, Representative Bierman, have Mr. Harvey explain the numbers here first and then follow up from you.
Chair Becker, members of the committee, included in your packets, like Representative Schultz mentioned, is preliminary tracking for House File 10, Section 3. Representative Schultz mentioned this, but the impact is, again, derived of just Section 3 related to House File 96 in the 23 legislature. That impact to Minnesota Care and the Health Care Access Fund is estimated to be a savings of $99,138,000.
Follow-up, Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Harney, for that information. I think just a note, this bill and its expansiveness is going to touch across quite a few agencies. And I'm just curious if, Mr. Chair, we can have the same assurance that was given on this bill in higher ed to have it come back to this committee for an accurate and rereading of it based on the fact that it will go to other committees and that the costs may vary quite a bit. And this is a finance committee of health. And so I'm just asking for that, that it would come back through this committee again.
Representative Bierman, the answer is yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that. A question for Mr. Schultz, please, directly, Mr. Chair.
Yes, go ahead, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz, first question I had is, I'm curious to know who you consulted in deciding to carry this legislation, and specifically regarding any healthcare entities you may have reached out to. Mr. Chair.
Representative Schultz, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Bierman for the question. Number one, I was opposed to the original change of this language in 2023, which I know doesn't come as a surprise to anybody around the table today. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, Representative Bierman, I've been looking to reform this for the purposes of the hardworking blue-collar Minnesotans. At the end of the day, it's that I think of the faces of the people who are in my community and represent, again, hardworking people who are just trying to get by. They are the number one stakeholder in this conversation. And throughout the conversation, while we have entered session here, I have engaged with a whole host of the folks who even came to testify today, and I will continue to do so. Thank you.
Follow up,
one,
Rupert.
One
yep,
more
go
question,
ahead.
Please.
We have quite a list here.
Sure. Thank you. I'll try to be brief. Representative Schultz, I'm sure you're familiar with EMTALA. That was mentioned when the Minnesota Hospital Association was up, and she talked about that. And I just wanted to know, you know, this issue about, as Ms. Krinke spoke about, the overburdening of our ERs and the number of people who are in there due to the fact many of them do not have insurance. And federal law requires that if a hospital has an emergency room, they need to stabilize everyone. So what happens is people turn to the ER for their health care. The highest cost of health care for people in the state of Minnesota, and then that uncompensated care stacks up, and we all end up paying for every dime of that health care. I don't know if you met with any of the ER physicians that were here last Thursday, but there were at least 100 of them running through the building. Hopefully you had a chance to speak to them, hear from them. One of their top asks was for us to do something about this overburdened ER. One system told me that they have letters on doors of extra rooms near the ER where they are putting people in, having to hold them there because there's so many people coming in who have conditions that, you know, if they had been caught early, had some preventative care, they would not be there. And this overburdening of our ERs with people who are not getting medical care because they don't have insurance is one significant part of the problem. The hospital told me we have a room A, we have room B, C, D, E. You know, we addressed this bill last year to try to address that problem. One thing in these healthcare committees, one thing usually doesn't fix it permanently. But it is certainly part of the problem with ER care. And to realize that those blue-collar workers are paying higher hospital premiums and insurance premiums because of this uncompensated healthcare in ERs is a significant issue that we all need to give consideration to. You know, it comes back to undocumented or not, denying healthcare and thinking it will lower costs by not providing it is short-sighted and it is mistaken. So I just ask you to consider that and realize, really, that this would help address that problem, which is paramount to hospitals right now. That's all for now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Schultz, thanks for talking to me on the floor about this. This is a hard bill, real hard bill for me. We see a blindfold on justice. And that blindfold's there for many reasons because it says everybody's going to be treated equally under the law. When I started in healthcare, I never cared who I was caring for. I just wanted them to get better or the pain to stop. This really goes to my heart on this one, big time. Not once when I was picking people off the street did I ever wonder what their nationality was, if they were legal, if they weren't, even if they were a criminal, didn't matter, because I had a job that I was called to do. working in the ER, the same thing. You're not going to have a situation where I know one person that I worked with over the years in an ER say, I'm sorry, you can't come in. And I don't think that's what you're asking us here to do, of saying, just deny care. I hope that's not what you're asking us to do. But you're asking us to do something even more important here. And that's saying that it doesn't matter, critical access, who you are, have found something to get. This isn't even full pay. I think it's probably 20 to 30 cents on the dollar that most of these plans pay. And these critical access hospitals around the state, which I've worked with personally, been out and talked to them last year because we were trying to fund ambulances, which this will affect. And they said the same thing. They said, this will matter. This will matter because, A, people will probably stop coming, but they won't come when they don't have control. The first time I delivered a baby was in a shed in a backyard in rural Minnesota. And, again, not knowing this, but I could understand, these were undocumented people. They begged us not to take them to the hospital because the birth went fine. Please, please help my colleagues in the field. Please help the nurses and the doctors and the ERs, because legislation like this is going to be really hard for them. This is going to cut, and who's going to pay for it? And have you, if it's not this, and this is my question, I know I've ranted here long enough, but my question, Representative Schultz, is if not this, how are we going to pay for EMS? How are we going to pay for our emergency care? Do you have a plan?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hewitt, number one, thank you for your years of service and for delivering that baby. You know, that life is a gift from God, and I recognize that human life, as I know that the people around this table also do. So thank you, number one. And I really appreciate the intentionality of your question here. I think there's a better way to do this. And I think that as it relates, whether it's emergency care, like you mentioned, whether it's the hospitals, I don't think that this is the solution that best suits Minnesotans. And ultimately, while I wish that I could spend more time around this particular table with all of you, I know that the best minds are already at this table and are working on solutions to address the challenges that you reference. And frankly, I hope that those bills and ideas that are being formulated and worked on right now are things that move forward to ensure the stability of the system for healthcare providers and emergency services in our state. Thank you for the question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you. And just remind members, focus on questions as much as possible. We do have a limited time. Next on deck is Representative Van Bingsbergen. Your question, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is for Representative Schultz. You know, a little bit ago we had a testifier up here that said Minnesotans are angry. And I agree. They are angry. They're angry at the cost of what's going on in this state. You know, it's interesting to me as I listen to the different groups speaking here today, and it appears many of their arguments are focused around money and preserving the status quo. And I'm here to protect the taxpayers of this state, and I believe Representative Schultz's bill is doing the same. My question to Representative Schultz is, could you give us a little context as far as, you know, I'm concerned that Minnesota is becoming a magnet for this type of health care. And can you tell us the number of enrollees or people, illegals, past, present, and future? Could you just give us a little context to that? Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Van Bingsbergen. When we take a look at this, recognize the testimony that was given that there is a stated number of approximately 82,000 folks in this population, and many of them haven't had this health insurance prior to January 1st of this year. I think that it's a good question for the committee to ask of the department to find exactly how many folks are already using this program And then secondarily to that, Representative, is the fact that the projection, which is found inside your fiscal note, is that despite the fact that there were 82,000 people in Minnesota who are here without legal status, the projection in the fiscal note from the last 2 years said only approximately 7,700 people would enroll in it. So the question for the committee is, how many people are using this program and at what cost, to your point, to Minnesota taxpayers and ultimately to the people who are trying to live paycheck to paycheck and are citizens of our great country? Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Is there who's in the audience that's possibly from DHS that could help with that question? Is there someone in Director Bailey, come on down. This ain't Price for Right, but close. State your name and thank you.
Chair Backer, members of the committee, I'm Elise Bailey. I'm the budget director for the Department of Human Services. I unfortunately don't have that number for you. As Representative mentioned, the program just began on January 1st. And so we don't have numbers today on how many have enrolled in the benefit. You did mention the fiscal note, and we do anticipate not that whole population of potentially eligible enrollees would enroll in the program. But given that it's just such a short period of time to this date, we don't have the numbers available today.
Okay. Thank you. Members, we have 20 minutes, and we have six members on the list right now. So remind, focus on those questions. And we now go to Hemmingson Yeager, representative. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. So I just kind of want to start with a point of, I guess, clarification, just a reminder for those who have been on the Health Committee before and those who are new. Medicaid, medical assistance, and MinCare are different things. Medical assistance is the way that we institute Medicaid, which comes from the federal government. Minnesota Care is a type of insurance pool that you buy into. So I just want to highlight that this bill is taking purchasing power and taking people out of our insurance pools. And my understanding about insurance is that when you have preventative care, it saves premiums down the line because you don't have to go into urgent care, emergency care, or those life and death situations. Also, when you're taking people out of the pool, you are leaving the high-risk people behind, which leads to greater healthcare costs. So I have great concerns about excluding people out of this insurance pool, which would then increase your healthcare costs, which are already increasing as you have already expanded on. So I would also like to comment about the breadth of testimony, both spoken today and in our packets. I just think it's amazing all of these people coming together expressing their serious concerns, and I hope you take those seriously. So I guess my question is, if you are decreasing the pool, exacerbating or increasing healthcare costs, how much are the premiums going to go up for those people left in the pool?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee and representative. When we take a look at this, ultimately, Minnesota taxpayers and every single person who goes to receive care at a hospital is paying into the provider tax, which pays into the healthcare access fund, which now, currently under these eligibility requirements, has the healthcare access fund paying double what we do for citizens. This is about making it more affordable for our citizens. That's what this does. And that's why I fully support it. Right now in this room, I have a constituent who's a farmer. And while I don't know exactly that family's circumstance, I know that there are farmers throughout my community who don't have access to quality, affordable health care. And the actions of the previous legislature put dollars in the hands of folks who don't have legal status and resulted in the farmers going without or paying very high premiums with high deductibles. And those are American citizens. We need to take care of our own first. Thank you.
Follow-up?
Yeah, I'm just curious, with the fiscal note coming, I didn't hear a number in there on how much my premiums are going to go up because we're kicking people off of healthcare. Thank you.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think the quick and easy answer for you, Representative, and I appreciate your great work that you do in data and numbers. You're one of the finest that we have in the legislature. And when we take a look at this, your health insurance premiums and the rates of Minnesotans will be like they were before. Why? Because currently, this program just started on January 1st. So to say that we've been able to see the impacts of the way that this program is going to play itself out is wrong.
Okay, thank you. Representative Ryler, go ahead. Ryer, I'll get that out, folks. Go ahead. Boy, tongue tied. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Diligence.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. And I'm having an identity crisis over my name here. So I'm
That's okay. Now. We know who you are.
So I want to switch gears and talk about Section 1 of the bill of House File 10. What do you mean exactly by must not receive any service? And you can confine that to the health realm since we're in the health, finance, and policy.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Ryer. I appreciate your question a lot, and I think that this is really at the heart of what we're discussing and debating today. It's the fact that government services paid for by Minnesota taxpayers are going to help fund people who didn't come here legally, creating a magnet for more people who are coming from foreign countries. That's at the heart of our conversation. As it relates to service, obviously there have been judicial cases, legal cases, that have determined how things need to be paid for, whether from the federal government or from the state government. Obviously, this language in Section 1 would speak to some of that, and we would rely upon the legal cases to determine whether or not tax dollars would follow that lens. But I will just say that this bill is likely not in its final form. And I invite you to the table to be a part of finding the right verbiage that fits for Minnesotans through the coming committee meetings and before it reaches the floor. Thank you.
Thank you. Follow up, go ahead. One, please.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. That doesn't help, Representative Schultz. What I'd like to know is what you're thinking, and are you thinking services mean healthcare services? I look at, or do you mean services provided by the Department of Health? Because if you look at that, they're doing water testing, they're doing population health. Are we going to have to check if someone has documentation to be here legally to have their well water tested? Are we going to have to go through the whole scope? And if so, have you calculated and quantified both the feasibility and the financial impact of what that would take? And I'm going to presume that probably those will leave some unanswered questions. So I would really love to hear from the health department on that if they're here.
Anybody from the health department? Please state your name and for the record. And members, we have four more reps on the list, and we're about 12 minutes away from voting, folks. Go ahead. Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I am Wendy Underwood, Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Health. And I agree on that earlier comment about the scope of people who have sat here this afternoon, so thank you for having me. Representative Ryer, as I understand your question, the potential impact of this bill on public health writ large. Thank you. And to your example of water testing, as you may know, the Minnesota Department of Health does support our clean drinking water, and that includes supporting the over 1 million private well users that we have all across the state. Those are the ones that we know of. And for example, we do have a private well grants program in which we distribute funds to local, regional, and tribal government organizations to help their communities with no and low cost well testing, with well clinics, with education, so that the well water that families are consuming is clean and safe. And then if it's not, to help address that. It is possible that that local programs are sharing those resources with families who would be impacted by this bill. I also think about our statewide effort to remove lead water pipes and programs to help families whose children have been identified as having high blood lead levels. So, I mean, it's yes, it spans a great gamut of public health work.
Okay, thank you, thank you. We're going to go to the next question. Representative Liebling, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, I'd like to say that I've heard this phrase, hardworking blue-collar Minnesotans, that this is protecting and there's protecting the taxpayers. I'd like to remind everybody that the very people we're talking about also belong in those categories. We've heard testimony here today. Some of these folks have been here 10 and 20 years, and what have they been doing? They've been working hard, probably a lot of them in blue-collar jobs, and they are taxpayers. So that is who we are talking about here. But there is this mythology that somehow that when people are undocumented, that it's hurting other people. And in this case, nothing could be further from the truth. So I remember when medical assistance or Medicaid was expanded under Obamacare to cover people who previously hadn't been covered, and there was a great debate in this legislature about that. And of course, some of the same arguments were used. And what happened? Well, as a result of that, states that did not expand medical assistance or Medicaid, who did not take up the opportunity to cover more people, a lot of their rural hospitals ended up closing. Their rural hospitals closed. But in Minnesota, although our hospitals have struggled just like everywhere, many fewer hospitals closed. So this is what I'm saying here, is that you think that you're only hurting undocumented people and you're somehow helping the other taxpayers? Wrong. As some of my colleagues have tried to explain, this is actually hurting your own constituents, especially if you live in a rural area, because your rural hospital will be much more likely to close. And even if it doesn't close, as has been noted, emergency departments will be much more crowded, even if you can get into them. And I see Representative Hewitt, who knows this, is shaking his head yes. So these kinds of cuts, you know, they might look okay on the spreadsheet, but it reverberates throughout the economy. And we're going to see that with a lot of the Trump cuts as he hits our government with a wrecking ball and takes money away from a lot of things that are funded through the National Institutes of Health and so on, and healthcare. The results of that are going to reverberate through the economy, and it will hurt every single person. But I also want to make this point. I've heard about how somehow the farmers are being disadvantaged. But my understanding is that if you meet the eligibility, meaning the fiscal eligibility, the financial eligibility, everybody can get on this program. If people can't, it's because their incomes are too high. And yeah, that is unfortunate. In my view, everybody should have access to health care no matter what. But no one is being treated differently at the same income level. But I do have a question, Representative Schultz. So we heard a bill the other day about crisis pregnancy centers and funding. I think it's Representative Zalesnikar wants to fund maternity. Is that right? Is that your bill, Representative Zalesnikar? I think it is. So under this House File 10, Representative Schultz, it seems like everybody's going to have to show their papers everywhere they go to get any service that they might want to get. And if we were, for example, to fund this bill for crisis pregnancy centers, it sounds like under House File 10 that Representative Zalesnikar's centers would have to turn away a pregnant mother who was undocumented. Is that how you understand this? Is that what that this would do? And beyond that, second kind of question, you can answer them together. Since hospitals are funded by state money in part, you know, however you think of state money flowing, we certainly do spend a lot of it in our hospitals and keep them afloat in many ways. Would that mean that no hospital could treat a person who's undocumented? So you're going to have to, when you show up at the emergency department, first thing is not going to just be, do you have insurance? It's going to be, where are your papers? Are you documented? Is that how this is going to work?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Liebling. Remember, at the very heart of this, we want to have legal citizens and residents of our state. Absent that, and I also want to make mention, the community that I represent, the approximately 43,000 people that live in my district, don't even have a hospital inside my district. And for frame of reference for you here, when we're thinking about this, there have already been plenty of legal cases that have been decided that have provided for the mechanisms for funding in these circumstances. Additionally, certainly when we're taking a look at exactly what this statute does, Representative Liebling, and I know that you worked on this a lot over the last 2 years, the way that this language is set up, it directly asks an applicant whether or not they are here legally. That is the step that it takes for them to even apply for this program. So in part, in order to even be eligible, they have to state whether or not they have legal status in this country. So it's not going to be any different from what is already provided under the law that you passed.
Okay, Representative Schultz. Because of time, we do have four people on there. Out of respect, I'm going to let Lead Bierman ask the last question before we go into our vote. So go ahead, Representative Bierman.
And then,
we're going to go to vote because we're going to be five after. And
okay,
we extended
thank you.
That. So.
So I think I'd rather give my colleagues a chance to speak then.
Okay, well.
Them anyway.
Okay, so the next on the list would be Representative Purcell. That was the that will be our last one before we take a vote, folks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before my questions, I'd like to request a roll call, please.
Absolutely.
Yep, roll call requested. We will have a roll call.
Great. Thank you so much. So I just have my first question is really quick to the bill author. Have you ever been on Minnesota Care, Representative Schultz?
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Chair, no.
Follow up. Representative Purcell.
Thank you. I have been, as have my children, when we were farming. And that didn't disqualify my neighbors, regardless of their country of origin or their age, for also joining us. That health care, I have to say, now as a state employee, much easier to navigate and a superior plan to what I get now as a state representative. So, yes, I would love this to be open to everyone, and I mean everyone. I have said I'd be the first one in line to sign my family back up for this sort of care. So from my personal experience as a farmer, as a rural Minnesotan, and as someone who has been able to access this program because of my household income, I'm really proud to stand with the Committee to Protect Healthcare, Doctors, Catholics, American Cancer Society, Minnesota Nurses Association, Minnesota Medical Association, Minnesota Hospital Association, Minnesota Farmers Union, victim survivors, and so many more folks who oppose this bill. I guess my last question to you, because we're looking at the health care impacts in this committee, but when I read this bill, I guess my question to you, we know what we're seeing the Musk-Trump administration do. They're wanting to round up folks and put them in camps, but
what
would you have the Minnesota government do with our hardworking, mixed-status, working-class Minnesota families?
And no outbursts, please, members. Representative Schultz, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My apologies, Representative Purcell. Could you restate the question there at the end of your comments?
Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Schultz, if you're wanting a certain segment of Minnesotans to not get care or any dollars that we provide here from the state for, I don't know, busing, public schools, health care, higher education, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. What do you want these families to do? Where are they supposed to go? How do we, as Minnesotans, take care of these neighbors? Where do these families go who might have mixed status in their households?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I mean, this ultimately goes back to the point. We want hardworking citizens of our country and of our state. And at the end of the day, should Minnesota taxpayers and the people who receive health care, who are legal citizens, should they be paying the bill for people who do not have legal status in our state? That is the question as to whether or not the taxpayers who are citizens of our country should be paying the bill for those who are coming from foreign countries.
Thank you, members, for a robust discussion. Representative Schultz, please close on your bill before we take a roll call vote.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I appreciate the robust debate, especially because this bill does have impacts beyond this specific issue area in Section 3 of this bill. I do encourage and invite your feedback and your ideas as to how we can make this bill even better as it moves forward. It will likely have multiple committee stops, and I look forward to the conversation with each and every one of you, and I appreciate robust support for this bill today as we seek to make Minnesota more affordable.
Okay, Representative Nadeau renews his motion that House File 10 be referred to the Committee of State Government Finance and Policy. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll. Go ahead.
Chair Backer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Nadeau.
Aye.
Chairman.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Carroll.
No.
Representative DePell.
Aye.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Franzen.
Yes.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
No.
Representative Hewitt.
No.
Representative Knutson.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
No.
Representative Mahmoud.
No.
Representative Perryman.
Aye.
Representative Purcell.
Purcell, nay.
Representative Rapinski.
Aye.
Representative Ryer.
No.
Representative Schumacher.
Aye.
Representative Van Binsbergen.
Aye.
Representative Zeleznikar.
Aye.
Okay, there being 11 ayes and 10 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 10 is referred to the Committee of State Government, Finance, and Policy. Thank you. Thank you, Representative Schultz, and again, thank you, members, for a robust discussion. Next on the agenda is House File 27, and I hand the gavel to Vice Chair Nadeau.
Are you 597?
Hello, Representative Backer.
Chair
Would you like to move that your bill be referred to Commerce, Finance, and Policy?
I would, Chair.
Mm-hmm. All right. So let's, Representative Backer moves that House File 27 be referred to the Committee on Commerce, Finance, and Policy. And please present your bill, Representative Backer.
Yes. What this bill does is it makes it very clear to the department that they are to discontinue any work on advancing a public option and that they should not put any additional state resources towards pursuing bottling, polling, and other activities to prepare for and submit a waiver. We have a good list of testifiers, so I'm going to let them testify for and against. So with that, Chair Nadeau.
Thank you.
Thanks, Representative Backer. So first on our list is Dan Andreessen, followed by Mary Krinke, followed by Bentley Graves. And you have 2 minutes, please. Please introduce your name and start with your testimony. Thanks very much.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, again, Dan Andreessen with the Minnesota Council of Health Plans. Thank you for the opportunity today to testify in support of House File 27. We understand the challenges and of healthcare affordability, and our members want to try to be constructive as possible in finding solutions, but open access to the Minnesota Care Program is the wrong direction. For the past year and a half, the state has embarked on studying and modeling a public option. Our concerns remain because there's many questions that remain unanswered. We don't know how this will impact the existing Minnesota Care Program, which is an important program for those who are financially in between Medicaid and private coverage. It is also unknown if the state can financially manage the program if its enrollment doubles within 1 year, or what would happen if a significant population joined the program when it's open to everyone in the state. If this shift occurs, it's unknown what will happen, what this will mean for providers, especially in rural areas. Under a public option, providers who are currently being reimbursed at commercial rates would now be reimbursed at Medicaid or Medicare rates, which providers say are already too low. We hear from providers that in the past that when their patient mix is too heavy on government level payments, it impacts their financial viability. And what happens if providers favor commercially insured patients because reimbursement is too low? We've already seen this happen in Medicaid, especially for dental care. This could mean that those in the Minnesota Care Program would have less access to care than those with commercial coverage. It's also unknown how this would impact the entire fully insured commercial market, those remaining in the individual market, and employers in the small and large group market who find themselves in destabilized markets with increased premiums and less insurance choices. Minnesota is not ready to apply for a federal waiver and enact a public option. Additionally, the state has a more pressing problem this year with the funding for the state's reinsurance program going away, which subsidizes insurance for those buying on their own in the individual market. Unless the program for this funding or funding for this program is restored, premiums in this market increase as much as 20% for this upcoming year. And this could worsen if at the same time federal enhanced subsidies are not renewed by Congress. Instead of continuing to work towards a public option, which has numerous unknown impacts, we urge the legislature to focus on continuing a successful program which has stabilized the individual market while evaluating newly enacted mandates that increase premiums. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up is Mary Krinke, followed by Bentley Graves. Ann New Brindley is in the hole.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Krinke, and I'm with the Minnesota Hospital Association. We've testified numerous times on the public option bill before, and we have the same concerns that we did last year. The Hospital Association has long been supportive of the Minnesota Care Program. We strongly support Minnesota Care. However, we do believe it is a program that was designed for low-income Minnesotans below the 200% poverty guidelines. And our fear and concerns with the public option bill was that there never was an upper income cap on the program as it was designed. It would basically let anyone into Minnesota Care regardless of their income. And why this is so important for the hospitals, 64% of our patients are now on either Medicare or Medicaid. And both of those programs pay hospitals below the cost of care. It's estimated for last year that would be about $2 billion in losses. We are struggling to keep that 36% in the private insurance market. And we really support a commercial insurance market staying in place. And that is why we have been opposed to the public option Minnesota Care. With that, we support House File 27. And thank you, Chair Backer.
Thank you. Bentley Graves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. We represent 6,000 employers across the state, every size of business, every industry, every corner of the state. The majority of Minnesotans, roughly 60%, get their health insurance through work. These and other Minnesotans in the commercial market pay doctors and hospitals more than twice as much as Minnesota Care pays these providers today. For better or worse, these higher payments ensure healthcare providers have the resources needed to pay staff, operate and maintain facilities, expand service offerings, and invest in new treatments, procedures, and devices to improve the health of the Minnesotans they serve. For better or worse, these higher payments pay for the accessible and quality healthcare ecosystem that we all enjoy and prioritize in Minnesota. But we have significant concerns about the impact a government-run Minnesota Care buy-in public option could have on our healthcare system in the state. Actuarial modeling suggests 70% of this program's enrollees will move to it from private coverage in the individual market, which pays doctors and hospitals at a higher commercial rate. The effect of this government-run public option then would be to reduce by half the amount doctors and hospitals are paid to care for these enrollees. Already 67% of Minnesota hospitals have negative operating margins, and yet labor costs are increasing and supply and service costs are rising. Under this proposal, with a growing number of patients walking through their doors paying less than what it costs to deliver care, how will they continue to do all the things that they do today? Will doctors and hospitals be forced to pull back on the services they currently offer? Will they make up the lost revenue by charging those with private insurance even more? The modeling also suggests that none of the roughly 60% of Minnesotans who currently have coverage through their employer will transition to this public option. Why? Why are we considering a plan for a public option that assumes that those in the majority of the public wouldn't consider this option? More importantly, what if they did? With more lives covered, the overall cost of the program to the state would increase, especially for this population, since the cost to cover these enrollees wouldn't be subsidized by federal pass-through funds. What's more, a shift in coverage like this would only exacerbate the access and cross-subsidization issues that we already anticipate from doctors and hospitals' payments being cut in half for an increasing number of their patients. We agree that the cost of healthcare is too high. Since 2017, Minnesota families all in healthcare spending has been amongst the highest in the country. But attempting to address this problem by arbitrarily slashing payments to providers through a government-run Minnesota Care buy-in public option invites a host of unintended consequences. Because of this, we support the efforts by Representative Backer through House File 27 to ensure that the state does not move forward with a plan that could reduce access to critical care and services and increase costs for those who get their insurance through work. Thank you for the opportunity to testify. Happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Up next is Ann New Brindley, followed by Stephen Rubis. And I just want to remind the testifiers, I know this is a complicated topic, and everybody wants to say a lot, but seriously, keep it to 2 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's fun to be with you today. I'm Ann New Brindley, Health Policy Director for the Minnesota Business Partnership. Well, we support Minnesota Care as it currently operates and share the goal of affordable and accessible health care for all. A Minnesota Care public option does not address escalating health insurance costs and may exacerbate the problem. In fact, the current public option waiver being pursued expands the existing Minnesota Care program, relying on the same systems while lowering reimbursement rates for providers for those who move from the commercial market. The public option will lead to greater cost shifting for private pay individuals in order to make up for those lower reimbursement rates from public programs. In addition, those lower reimbursement rates are at odds with the commitment of providers to pay their workers well. As we know, when adjusted for cost of living, Minnesota nurses are the highest paid nurses in the country, and we should all be very proud of that. A Minnesota Care public option could also reduce access to health care as the limitations of cost shifting are reached. As the public pay population increases, health care providers will be increasingly unable to make up for the lower reimbursement rates, and providers already operating on the margins may be forced to cut services. Thank you.
Thank you. Stephen Rubis, followed by Kate Lynch.
Chair Nadeau, members, my name is Stephen Rubis with Alameda Public Affairs here on behalf of the Health Plan Partnership of Minnesota. HPPM's mission is to advocate for accessible, competitive, high-quality, and affordable health care across Minnesota. HPPM supports the efforts in House File 27 to withdraw the authority for the Commissioner of Commerce to submit a 1332 waiver to implement a public option, while also canceling the $21 million appropriation from the Health Care Access Fund. The current administration in Washington, D.C. has indicated no appetite for a public option at this point. Minnesota's attention should be focused on stabilizing the insurance market through reauthorization of the reinsurance program and to reducing health care costs on Minnesotans. Thank you very much, and I stand for any questions.
Thank you. Kate Lynch, and after her will be Brenda Rudolph.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kate Lynch. I work as a as an LPN at Health Partners. I live in Roseville, and I'm here to testify on behalf of my union, SEIU Healthcare Minnesota and Iowa, which represents about 50,000 healthcare workers around the state at hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and self-directed home care. We are in opposition of House File 27. At a time when so many of us are angry about rising healthcare costs and the greed that we see from health insurance companies, it's shocking you would consider blocking a path that could potentially lower healthcare costs. No matter their political party or area of the state where they live, Minnesotans I know are not happy with the current system at all and want to see change. Instead of looking for a path forward, today we are proposing blocking a way to help families in your district and across the state. I don't recall anyone running for election saying they want to block a path towards lowering healthcare costs. As a nurse, too many of my patients are forced to buy high-cost private health insurance plans with heavy cost sharing. Today you're trying to block a path towards expanding Minnesota Care, which is a lower-cost public plan with better coverage. Every day people call in with serious health issues. We recommend that they come to the clinic so we can better diagnose or treat the issue, and every day we have a few respond, "I can't afford the copay or my deductible is too high." I'm not just here as a caregiver, I'm also a concerned mother. I have two adult sons, Martin and Jack, one of whom is still on my insurance and the other who just aged off. I've testified multiple times over the last few years my fear of them facing the reality of having to use their employer's health care or finding something on the current marketplace. And now that is a reality for one and soon will be for the other. I'm scared they'll have bad insurance, skip appointments, and not prioritize their health for the fear of the cost. The waiver you are trying to block could open a path forward to help my family. Please vote no on House File 27 and then actually get to work trying to lower health care costs. Thank you.
Thank you. Up next is Brenda Rudolph, followed by Dan Quillen.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Brenda Rudolph. It's spelt wrong in the agenda as well. It's like the reindeer, PH is at the end. I farm in Morrison County with my husband and two children, Everett and Vivian is here with me today. On behalf of myself and Minnesota Farmers Union, I'm here to share my opposition of House File 27, which would undo progress on expanding Minnesota Care to farmers and other small business owners through a public option. For me personally, this is important to me because we're on Minnesota Care and know it to be a high-quality product that covers the care we need. Many families are faced with difficult decisions of even going to the doctor due to the fact of high out-of-pocket on top of ridiculously high monthly premiums. Farmers are faced with the decision to not carry insurance on themselves, take the risk of not having insurance, and essentially pay as you go. In turn, not seeking health care or preventive care. Farmers and small business owners are wanting affordable health care. $2,083.51 monthly premiums with a $7,500 out-of-pocket deductible is not affordable health insurance. The reality is mothers are texting or calling each other trying to decide if they should take their children into a clinic for cuts needing stitches because of the weight of the financial burden. That is what is happening in rural Minnesota. This last May, I needed some testing on my heart after repeated shortness of breath. Test came back at 50% blockage. As this percentage, it is recommended for the patient to decide to have an angiogram or not. I was on the fence. The risk of the procedure and not having the feeling of overusing my health care. After my husband's insistence, I elected to have the procedure. Turns out I had 90% blockage and a stent was needed to be placed in my heart. If I had the financial weight of paying for the entire procedure out of pocket to decide of having it or not, I would not have had it done. At my follow-up appointment, I asked my doctor if I would not have had to have it done, how much time would have I had? And she said, not much. So I wouldn't be here to be able to testify for you if I was not on Minnesota Care. Thank you again for allowing me to share my opposition to HF 27 and my support for continuing to expand Minnesota Care to cover more families. We need affordable health care. Thank you.
Thank you. Dan Quillen is up now, and then our last three testifiers will be on Zoom.
My name is Dan Quillen. I live in West St. Paul. I strongly oppose the removal of Minnesota's authority to seek a 1332 waiver for funding our public option legislation. This authority is crucial for the health of Minnesotans. Minnesota has led the way in healthcare reforms, using waivers to innovate and address healthcare cost challenges. Before the ACA, my two sons accessed Minnesota Care, which changed their lives, including life-changing chemical dependency treatment for one of them. With the current chaos in Washington, now is not the time to reverse the progress we have made. Enhanced premium tax credits are set to expire later this year, leading to a potential increase of 25% to 30% in insurance premiums for the individual market. This will force thousands of Minnesotans to lose coverage, a cruel and unnecessary outcome. Insurance companies will still make their dubious profits from premiums, but many Minnesotans will suffer as a result. Removing Minnesota authority to seek this waiver jeopardizes affordable health care. By retaining this authority, we can tailor solutions to our community's needs. A public option can reduce health care costs through increased competition, allowing Minnesotans to remain a model for affordable health care. Health care is a fundamental human right. Small businesses and farmers who rely on the individual market are at risk. The 1332 waiver is vital for addressing health care access for underserved populations. Removing this authority endangers those who buy insurance on the individual market. I urge you to preserve this crucial tool. We will need it to weather the coming storm.
Please wrap it up, Mr. Quinlan.
Please vote no on House File 27.
Thank you.
That was perfect.
All right. Are we ready for the virtual testifiers? Welcome to the Health Committee. We're glad that you're here. Please limit your testimony to 2 minutes, and we are going to start with Cindy Vanderpool.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Cindy Vanderpool, and together with my husband, Josh, we own and operate Pastures of Plenty Farm in Kirkova, Minnesota. On behalf of myself and Minnesota Farmers Union, I want to share my opposition to undoing the progress we have made in Minnesota Care public option. With so much uncertainty in the healthcare space and continuing challenges for families like mine, I don't know why we are taking this step to limit the state's options going forward. When I first came to the Capitol, I talked about being a farmer and a small business owner and how hard it is to find quality coverage that we can afford. I shared that we were always afraid of getting hurt or sick and how that could financially devastate our family farm. In 2022, I did get sick. I was diagnosed with breast cancer and underwent 33 rounds of radiation treatment and 2 surgeries. Thankfully, our income was low enough that year to qualify for Minnesota Care. That was a godsend for us, for I had nearly $200,000 in medical bills that Minnesota Care paid for that care. Minnesota Care probably saved our family farm, and I can confidently say that it is worth expanding to other families around Minnesota so that they don't have to fear how to pay for those medical treatments and just focus on getting better. I am now cancer-free, and that is great. But insurance is still a roller coaster. Last year, our income was too high, so we went without insurance. And we saved up for my medications, which are about $500 for 3 months, and for my appointments, which are about $1,000 twice a year. This year, it did work for us to buy health insurance, but it is now $1,400 a month, and some months it will be a struggle to get that paid. Our deductible is $1,300 in network and $40,000 outside of the network. It is a constant stress, and I have to believe we can do better than this. I believe strongly that the public option is a bold, meaningful step forward, and I appreciate the legislature's work to craft this first step, and I urge you not to discard this progress that we have made. Thank you for letting me testify remotely.
Thank you. And next up is Tawanda Burks. Please state your name for the record.
Yes. Hi. Good afternoon, Chair Backer and members of the committee. My name is Tawanda Burks. I'm a small business owner, an educator, and most importantly, a mother. I am here today to strongly oppose House File 27 because it threatens access to affordable health care when so many Minnesotans, myself included, can't afford to lose any more ground. My daughter has type 1 diabetes. Every meal she eats requires insulin. There's no skipping a dose, no waiting until payday. But there have been times when I stood at the pharmacy counter doing the math in my head, trying to figure out if I could afford the insulin she needs to survive. Then there has been times I had to forego my own doctor's visits because I didn't have insurance at that moment. That's not just my reality. That's the reality for countless other parents, small business owners, and hardworking Minnesotans who fall into the gap between making too much for public programs and too little to afford decent private insurance. HF 27 takes us in the wrong direction. Instead of expanding Minnesota care, an already successful, reliable program, this bill limits our state's ability to innovate and respond to healthcare challenges. The Minnesota Care Public Options would allow more people to buy into affordable, high-quality coverage, including vision, dental, and prescription medications, with a lower out-of-pocket cost. But this bill would slam that door shut. It would also tie our hands on critical innovation waivers at a time when federal healthcare policy is anything but stable. We should be making it easier for Minnesotans to access healthcare, not harder. We should be fighting for more affordable options, not stripping them away. I urge the committee to oppose HF 27 and focus on solutions that expand access, not create new barriers. Minnesotans deserve better. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Next up is Patty Larson.
Good afternoon, Chairman Backer and members of the committee. My name is Patty Larson. I'm retired and I live near Albert Lea. I'm speaking in opposition to HF 27. I think most people would agree our healthcare system is broken. While health insurance companies make record-breaking profits, like me and my husband have struggled to afford the care we need. A bill like HF 27 is taking away the opportunity that we can have affordable and accessible healthcare for more people in our state. My husband, Dave, had 10 months before getting Medicare when he retired. Our financial advisor assured us that we could get affordable health insurance through MinSure if we kept our taxable income down for that year. We were able to find insurance, but our options were only high deductible health insurance. Our deductible was $7,900 and did not cover ER visits until deductible was met. It was met and then would pay 50%. Unfortunately, Dave had a heart issue in those 10 months that required a visit to the ER. Just one morning in the ER, our final bill responsibility was $10,000. We have been paying $395 a month for almost 2 years on this one bill, and it will be paid off in April. This payment, together with our other medical bills, premiums, and prescriptions, is by far our biggest expense. Because of this, we have postponed medical care at times. People, all people, with low middle to middle income levels can get completely bogged down with medical debt if they do not have insurance through their work, such as small business owners, employees of small business, retirees, and farmers. We do not have a low enough income to get Medicaid or Minnesota care, and also we do not make enough money to live sustainably if we want decent health care, which I believe everyone has a right to. So I ask that the committee oppose HF 27 and find ways to expand public health insurance access. not create more barriers to it. Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Is there any other people in the committee room that want to testify? Great. Public testimony is closed. I will open it up for member questions. Seeing none, Representative Bierman. I know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe everyone at this table right now in this committee want to find better access, reduced cost, and improve outcomes for the health of Minnesotans. It's not an easy thing to do. We have, you know, things that have been out there in the past and just the recent past while I've been here. Reinsurance was one of them. High cost of health care, trying to get insurance for people when I first came in. And the idea was reinsurance. That will be a bridge to a better place and we'll figure it out. And we're still trying to figure it out. So while we continue the work, I believe we need to keep options on the table that we can consider together and find a better way to do healthcare. Not cut things off when they have promise. You know, reinsurance, 2017, I believe it was a $200 million program. Then it was a $300 million program. Now we're somewhere $400 to $500 million program. 2 years from now, what are we looking at? $700 million, $900 million? Real costs. So this effort to just shut this thing down and not consider it, and that's all we're looking to do is consider it. By continuing and going forward with the waiver, we still have to do our own due diligence, look at this plan in comparison to some of the other plans that are going to be coming forward next year through MDH. Other options to consider, completely different. Doing those studies are important. There is a better way. We know that as Americans looking out from our system at other systems that work differently with far better outcomes than the health care that we are getting in this country. So members, there's no reason to shut this waiver down. There would be more work to implement it. There would be more actuarial values if it's on the table when the waiver is approved. So I ask you to vote no on this bill and continue to keep this option available. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Backer?
Yeah, thank you, Lee Bierman. And you and I have worked a lot already, and we both care about health care. The challenge with this is, number one, it's no good plan yet to implement it. Number two, as you are well aware of, Representative Bierman, critical access hospitals in greater Minnesota is a top concern of mine. And this would put another nail in the coffin, because this, the reimbursement rates for this is so much lower. And then we can look at possibly services on the public option. We know that DHS is proposing taking away chiropractic benefits from those on MA. Uh-huh. So I'm really concerned that this public option would A, lower the health care, raise prices, and close down critical access hospitals. I remember when I sat first on this committee when Chair Dean was chair and we were just switching over to Affordable Care Act. And I remember a lot of my folks that year when I went door knocking said, you know what, I'm okay with health care. The next year, they were hungry and upset because of the increase in premium. And a government-ran program does not help lower care. If it did, we would be better off after 10 years. So that's thank you for sharing that. I don't see this as our answer, like you. I want to find a better method. Thank you.
Thanks. Representative Mahmoud, you took your name off?
Yes.
Okay.
Lee Berman covered where I was going.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Bonner. Nope. All right. Any other questions? Discussion? Seeing none, thank you. With that, Representative Backer renews his motion that House File 27 be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce, Finance, and Policy. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed?
Yes. No. No.
Motion passes. And House File 27 is re-referred to the Committee on Commerce, Finance, and Policy. Seeing no further business before the committee, will not be meeting on Wednesday, February 19th, due to other activities of the House, and we are adjourned.